The NBA playoffs are here, and with FanDuel, your group chat's about to be going off. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets if you win. And with live bets, your heart emojis will really be racing from tip-off to the final buzzer. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid faster than your friends can send you a victory gif. Or is it GIF? Who cares? You won! So get the word out to your crew and download FanDuel today. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Official partner of the NBA.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
I'm Marjorie Punnett.
I'm Elizabeth Reese.
This is Best of the Nest, the podcast that's all about creating strong, comfortable, beautiful nests that prepare us to fly. And we're doing a late night podcast because our schedules are so busy this week. So that means even though we're going to be talking about stuff our kids shouldn't do, right. It's a boozy podcast. It's what are you drinking tonight?
I'm drinking a really good glass of red wine and I feel so happy about it. This is like Jay opened this bottle the other night when he made some steaks on the grill and there's like just enough for one little glass left for me. And so I'm drinking
little glass. I'm not sure that's a little glass.
Oh my gosh. This is a giant glass with, I'm savoring this. I'm like sad. There's like maybe 4 ounces in here. If even good, you know, I think a whole bottle of Pinot can fit into this glass.
I love that.
It's like a party trick.
I got a little bullet bourbon.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. It's going to be very good tonight. I don't think I've had a drink in like 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
Really?
Maybe.
So I had just a drink on Saturday. What day is it? Tuesday. I had a drink on Saturday and now I think that's fine.
Of course it's fine. I got out of the habit.
I know. I think it's a good habit to get out of. I've done the same thing too, where I'm just not doing, I'm just finding that I'm not feeling good if I'm drinking every day. And I mean, and by drinking every day, I mean like a glass of wine, you know, we're not like, things aren't crazy,
right?
But I'm just like not feeling good. And so I'm trying to be really intentional, but like, I knew we were going to have this conversation tonight. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to sit with Marjorie and have a glass of wine. It's going to be lovely.
And you know, when you do it with intention, I have found that I enjoy it more as I had gotten older.
Yeah.
It really didn't hit me in like the last 3 years that most of the time wine doesn't feel good.
I know.
And so if I do it with intention and I just have a glass, it's very special and it's great. But it is interesting how your body tells you, nope, not metabolizing that anymore. That's not working for you anymore. And it was kind of sad. I'm over it now, but it was kind of sad because I really like the taste of liquor, as we've talked about before.
I know. I've been feeling a little sad about it too. Cause like when I've been going on girls trips, I've kind of become like the party pooper, like the one that everyone's like four glasses in and I'm like one. And I'm halfway into the one and then I'm like, what is happening to me? But I think I might've used it all up in my youth. Listen, I was very fun for a very long time. I was just talking about you the other day. Who was I talking to about drinking? I think it was my mom. And I was like, Marjorie quit drinking at 19 and then took it up again at 40.
Pretty much that's the case. I mean, it's so strange to think about that, but I mean, I didn't miss it all those years. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I took it up again was because we became friends, really good friend of ours to this day. And we would go out to dinner and he had great taste in wine.
Yeah.
And so we'd go to dinner and I mean, you could just tell he was ordering something luscious and good. And so it's like, well, hell, I have free will. I could drink again. And so that's when I started drinking again. Not one regret about that. I think it's good.
It's just always good to keep it in check with anything. Yeah. Yeah. And I might need more of the wine because I can hear the yelling that's happening downstairs. My children are like, so I told Jay, just to give you guys some behind the scenes, Jay was pheasant hunting with like work people today. You know, this is his job. It's a pretty good deal. And And then he wants to go watch the Wild game. But I said, that's great. But like, I'm doing a podcast with Marjorie at 8. So you got to get these kids to bed. So like, I have them already. They were fed. We got home from a walk, whatever. And then, and now I can hear my kids have been like real. It's just, we're in a fighty spot with bedtime. Cause they all like needle each other and get each other all riled up.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to get to the point of getting them to bed peacefully without having to like snap. That's where we're at right now.
Right.
It doesn't feel good either.
Bedtime's tough. I mean, it's tough. I always thought if I could do it again, and this sounds ridiculous because I don't have to test this theory because I'm done. But if I had to do it all over again, if I'd started them very, very young with a meditation ritual before bedtime.
Yeah.
Like, so they never knew anything different.
That's a good idea.
I mean, like, really, like, it's almost too late for you. But like, if you started your kids at like 3 with, that's just how people do it. Like, because they don't know. And if they started to think that, well, you can't go to bed, like that has to be done.
I know.
Could you try that as an experiment?
Yeah, there's those bedtime like story apps that kids get excited about.
Yeah.
And my kids were really good. We have a Tony box, which if you don't have a Tony box, they are very fun. It's this German toy and it's for screen-free entertainment. But what it is it's like a little box. It's like a little speaker box. Ours is red. They come in different colors. And then you purchase the stories that are called the Tonies. And it's T-O-N-I-E. And you put them on top of the box. It's a little figurine. So for example, like Peter Rabbit is a story that you can purchase. And then we have the Peter Rabbit figurine. And then you put it on top of the Tony box. And then it goes do do do. And then you can play, it plays the story. And then it plays songs and all these things. And my kids were like so into it for probably like 2 years. It was just like every night we would read a book and then I'd be like, okay, now we turn on a Tony. And then they would fall asleep to the Tony.
Yeah.
And then they sort of like, you know, it's like they buck everything. It's like how they would used to eat full sweet potatoes. And then one day they're like, I hate sweet potatoes. Like now they like the Tony box, but they like it in the playroom. They don't want it before they go to bed.
Right.
So I got to figure out something because I can hear him going, I need you to listen. You got to listen like right now.
And that was always the hardest thing for me is either starting the day with frustration or anger or ending the day with frustration or anger.
It's terrible.
Those were the parenting. Those are the things that made me so sad.
I know.
Is, you know, if I got mad in the middle of the day, I knew there was recovery time.
Yeah.
But sending the kids off to school in a state of agitation, of my agitation, I hated that feeling. And at nighttime too, when the kids were like young, maybe like, gosh, Campbell was still a baby. So between like 1 and 3, my husband Ian was doing a nighttime radio show in Chicago.
Yeah.
And so I had them every single night.
Every night by yourself.
By myself.
Yeah.
And one of the things he started doing was just actually helpful. On the air, he used to do a thing called Book at Bedtime. And he would have, and I have the master tape of this somewhere, but he interviewed a lot of celebrities then. And he would have them read their favorite children's book.
Oh, that's cute.
So we have like Eartha Kitt reading her favorite children's book. I don't know if you know who Gene Siskel is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Reading his favorite children's book. Like so many celebrities reading their favorite children's book. And the kids would listen to it and then go to bed.
Okay. That was pretty
cool. It was pretty cool. I mean, not consistently, but because he didn't have a celebrity on every single night. But it was pretty cool. And it was a way, but I think ritual is sort of the key to it. And then you just have to grow with their ritual. So you have to just figure out what the new ritual is.
I know. I think you're totally right. Cause I think I'm just like in a shift.
Yeah.
And then I told you Heathcliff, you know, he moved out of he was at 2 years old. He was like, I don't sleep in my crib. I sleep with brother and sister. And he went with the third kid. He just like, don't argue. And what are you going to do? He started climbing out of his crib. What am I going to do, Marjorie? Keep putting him back in there? Put a lid on the freaking thing? Let me know how I'm supposed to solve this.
And all of your kids are super verbal.
Oh, super verbal.
All of them have
been. It's wild.
It's weird. It's so cool.
like, for how small they are.
I know. This, like Franklin, when I met him, he was like 2 and I could have like a full on conversation with him. It was so bizarre. That's fantastic.
Yeah. People get really kind of weirded out by that when we're in public, because I kind of forget about it now because he's not in a daycare setting. You know, we have a nanny. And so it's just a different deal. I'm not like talking to multiple teachers or like talking to other parents about him as much. But he is very, very verbal. And so now they all sleep together in the same room. And so it's just been this like, and there's 3 of them, you know, so one winds up the other one and then the other one, and then they're coming in. And I like really need time at the end of the night to just decompress, to read, to whatever. I lay on one of my many mats, you know, I'm on my acupressure mat, I'm on my PEMF mat. I like have to like, just, I've got to just charge again. And then when they come in 15 times, I mean, the rage monster comes out. Like, I'm just, I'm mean. I'm like, you have to go to bed, you know, because it's like, when it's 9:30, Marjorie, and you started this process, as the Canadians like say, at 8:15, it's like you've lost the will to live. You don't care.
And if I ever met a woman, and I'll say it this way, I would like to meet the woman who has never had that moment at bedtime. That crazy, like, go to bed. Like, I'm going to lose my mind if you don't
like,
go to bed.
Like, it almost hurts your throat. It's how loud it's you yell.
It's terrible.
It's really terrible. I can hear now, like, murmuring. So now
they're getting closer.
I think that he's at the reading a book phase.
Okay.
And because I hear his, like, sing-songy voice, and I don't feel any thuds, which threaten the structural integrity of this house, which means no one's jumping, leaping, bouncing.
I may have an idea for you. I'm trying to think, whose room are they all in? Franklin's or Bernie's?
Franklin's room. Yeah. I do threaten to separate them too.
Here's a thought. I've seen this on Instagram where these little bed tents.
Oh yeah.
So everybody has their own bed tent.
Yeah.
So like you could zip them in at night.
Yeah.
And then like, they're not allowed to get out of bed.
That's a good idea.
Now that they could always actually come up make with something.
I need water. I need to go to the bathroom.
That could make them insane. Yeah. Or that could work. I'm not sure which. Like the idea of them getting closed in, that could be very traumatic. So maybe that's not such a good
idea.
They
have bunk beds, so they like, and they do kind of create like a fort in there. But it is, you know, this too shall pass. And it is, you know, I'm not going to get worked up about it. But at the same time, it's very like, I do miss that. I was at that phase where I could just put the baby down at 7:30 and like he would just go down and then I would get the other kids to bed. And it, and I really had like a solid, you know, cause I like to hit the hay by like 9:45. Out like a light.
Oh my God.
I got it.
I never had a baby. I mean, other Campbell would go to sleep. Gar never slept ever. Never took naps as a baby. And I had Gar in Nashville and I took him to the doctor. I think I've said this story on the podcast, but I took him to the doctor and he's like, how's it going? Wonderful pediatrician in Nashville. How's it going? And I'm like, I'm so tired. Just so tired.
He never sleeps.
He was walking at 8 months.
Yeah.
Child has never stopped moving.
Yeah.
And the doctor said, just close the door. And he would climb out of his crib, you know. Oh yeah. He's a freak, just a freaky child. And I don't remember at what age he climbed out of his crib, but it's pretty young. And the doctor said, just close the door.
Yeah.
And you go take a nap. And I'm like, that feels so wrong. He's like, you need to get some sleep. It was just, and he would stay up late and he's still the same way. And the thing that saved us with him was when he was 4, we put him in karate. He was in karate every single day. And then, because he just has so much energy. You've met the boy.
Yeah, he really is something special.
So much energy. And then once he started swimming in 4th grade, that was the secret. Because he would just, swimming just takes so much energy and it's constant energy. And then he would go to bed. But it took like, I mean, through college, he was doing 2-a-days and was still surviving. I mean, it's insane. Gosh.
Yeah.
But he's like his father. He just doesn't stop moving. But
I want to stop moving all the time. I want to be still so much. I just want everything to be slow and still. And
I love bed. And that was part of my problem is I love being in bed.
Oh, I love it.
I love sleeping. Yep. I love everything about it.
I know. I'm excited to go to bed after we talk here.
Well, it's we can end it now.
No. We have a topic. We have to get to it a little bit. I think
we just covered
bit.
A topic.
I know, but we have another topic. We've got to get to it. We've got a little bit of time to talk about it. I still have like at least 2.5 ounces left.
There you go. Well, this is something that is very near and dear to my heart and I feel very strongly about. And I'm just going to confess from the outset of this conversation, I am grateful that I'm not raising children now in the age of social media. I think, you know, generations always talk about, oh, it was this way when I did it. What I know for sure is that it was easier to raise children when I raised my children than it is for your generation.
I think you're right.
Social media, telephones, the internet, YouTube, all of it. It's changed the game in parenting because I could control my children's world. Parents can, even though they think they cannot control the world that their child lives in.
It's
and that
so
is frightening.
Yeah, it is. I'm the last generation. I was born in 1981, in case you were wondering. It's a lovely time. And we're the last generation that remembers life before the internet and then life after. Like, we are the last ones who grew up without it because there wasn't even Facebook when I was in college. Facebook launched. When Facebook launched, it was only for college students.
Right.
And it was called the Facebook. And it was when I had just graduated from college. So like I didn't get a cell phone until I was a sophomore in college. When I went to college, no one had cell phones. Everybody. And I remember thinking like, why would I need a cell phone? I mean, I had a phone in my dorm and then that was it. And it was sophomore year that everybody started getting them. And then it was... Then you had cameras on your phones, probably my senior year of college, but they were like so bad. The quality was just terrible. And we had so few minutes on our phones that we like never really used them. You just like use them intermittently. Nobody texted. Right. Nobody texted until I was probably a senior in college or just out. So it's interesting to think of like how different my childhood was in terms of the technology that was available compared to now.
Well, in terms of phones and Zoom and all of those things and selfies, and I mean, I just came across the most disturbing thing today, which was I was trying to get an app for something, and this other app popped up, which was how to improve your own selfies. And so they showed a quick little diagram of a woman, of a young girl who's a teenager.
Yeah.
Changing her nose, changing her lips, changing her eyes, changing her hair. So she went from kind of a normal looking teenage girl to this kind of sexy, pouty.
Like AI.
It was, and I just thought, oh my God. I mean, I don't remember, honestly, I mean, part of this is because I went to an all-girl Catholic high school. I don't remember looking at myself. Like, I don't remember. I didn't wear much makeup ever. Yeah. I never have. I don't remember ever being very focused on what I looked like. And I know that I'm probably the extreme in girldom, even for the girls that I knew. I just didn't care. I honestly didn't care what I looked like. It didn't matter to me.
Right.
But there were girls that I knew that wore makeup. I mean, we weren't allowed to wear makeup to school, but when we would all go out, I mean, girls were wearing some makeup, but not like now. I mean, there were no tutorials. People would have like obnoxious blue eyeshadow and some mascara. That'd be the thing. But I think about girls now, where so much centers around your face. Like, what does your face look like? And that would have driven me absolutely insane.
I know.
Because it's pointless. It doesn't matter. What you look like, unless you're in certain professions, it doesn't matter. And I feel like it's just because of social channels, because of selfies, because of Instagram, because of all of that. I mean, I think about in my high school box, I have a pack of pictures that we would take, like if we were out at a party and you'd bring like a camera and you take them and then you'd go get them developed. And they're hysterical. I mean, it's having a party with the boys and all of that. I was thinking about how weird it would be if I carried that pack of pictures around with me. Do you know what I mean? Like, all of these young women are carrying themselves in their phone at all times so they can go back and look at themselves. It's very strange. I mean, if I had done that, I would have been a freak.
I would be
like, what are you doing? Why are you looking at yourself?
I know. The excessive documenting of things is really true. I mean, I notice this even with my own children because I always have a phone with me. Yeah. So I always have the ability to take a picture. Just tonight, I took the kids out for a walk after dinner.
Right.
And they just always want me to take a picture of them. Like, it's like, take a picture of this, take a picture of me doing a cartwheel, take a video of me doing a cartwheel, to come over to the tree that I'm climbing and take a picture of me climbing the tree.
Interesting.
And then they want to see the picture immediately. All parents of young kids right now are nodding their heads going, okay, I get it.
They want photo approval.
They all want to say, they say, I see it. I see it. I mean, they start saying that really early. Like Heathcliff says, I see it. I see it. They want to see the photo. And so I do my best to go, like tonight, we went out on a walk. I took a couple of pictures of them in this cool tree and then climbing another tree. I mean, they're doing like very fun outdoorsy things. And we live in the city and they have specific trees that they like to stop at and climb. And that's what we do. And, but I say, you can see it when we get home. Right. Like we're not going to stop what we're doing to look at I'll take the picture. And then sometimes I have to be like, oh no, let's just keep going and do the cartwheel. We don't have to take a picture of it. Like, it's just, I know, but I mean,
there are new pathways being formed.
Yes.
In this generation, which is very weird to me.
I know.
Because it can't be good. Honestly, I don't know how it can be good.
That brings us to Jennifer Garner. She just talked about this.
I see it. Yeah, this is interesting. And this is more specifically about social media.
Yeah.
So I'm reading right from the Today Show page. It said, in a new interview for Today, the 50-year-old actress shared she challenged her kids to show her how social media can be beneficial. I just said to my kids, show me the articles that prove that social media is good for teenagers, and then we'll have the conversation. She added, find scientific evidence that matches what I have that says it's not good for teenagers, then we'll chat. So she doesn't allow her kids to be on any social channels, which is smart because her parents are so public. That would be hard anyway.
Right.
But I know a lot of parents actually who are at high profile jobs who don't allow their kids to have social channels just because that could get a little weird if outside media got a hold of their children's social channels.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that having been said, I don't think that's her reasoning 100%. I think she's just trying to be a good mom and saying, this isn't healthy. This isn't good for you. So I went and I did a little deep dive and I found there's this great study, and I'll put it in the show notes from Pew Research from 2021. And it said, YouTube is the platform most commonly used by teens, with 95% of those ages 13 to 17 saying they have ever used it, according to a center survey. Two-thirds of the teens report using TikTok, followed by 6 in 10 who say they use Instagram, so 62%, 59% use Snapchat, and then smaller shares of Twitter, Twitch, and WhatsApp. The majority of teens.
Twitch is. I've never even heard of that.
Oh, Twitch started. It was like play-by-play on gaming.
Oh.
So it's all gaming. It used to be all gaming. I think it's expanded from them.
This but explains you could why like I don't watch them.
You could watch people playing games. And they'd be narrating the games.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not a part of Twitch. Majority of teens use YouTube and TikTok every day, and some report using these sites almost constantly. About 3/4 of teens say they use YouTube daily, with a smaller majority of teens, 58%. All of the teenagers I knew, even my kids were teenagers, and now that they're in their 20s, and I have one in his 30s.
Wow.
I know. They get everything from YouTube. Mm-hmm. They get their news. So that's a stable now. Majorities of teens use YouTube and TikTok every day. Oh, I said that one already. So I just think what's interesting, though, is for me, when I look at young children, it's Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok.
TikTok, for sure.
I think those are the most dangerous.
Yeah, I think so, too. I just... You know, it's interesting. And I think like parents are making their own choices about this now. Every year that goes by, I feel like the general rule. I mean, it's sort of like sugar, you know, it's like you just delay it as long as possible, you know, even like a mainstream pediatrician, like I know I'm a hippie, whatever, but like even a mainstream pediatrician will tell you, like the World Health Organization says, no added sugar before the age of two. And people just can't believe that. They're like shoving, I mean, it's like 18 months old, month olds with just candy, you know, and it's.
Well, my pediatrician had, it was like, you know, what are they drinking? And I was giving them fruit juice. He's like, no.
Oh yeah.
Water. So I think people don't even know, like they're not thinking about how much sugar's in fruit juice.
It's so, I mean, and I think that's shifted too. Like people are definitely more aware of that. And I think as the years go on with social media, they're going to become more aware because, you know, the guidelines from these social media companies is that you can't be on it until you're 13, I think. But I was reading something on social media. I was reading about social media on social media from this account just today that was talking about that the guidelines that were set, that they kind of based that off of, were set in 1998 with regards to consumption of media. And that has nothing to do with social media because social media didn't exist in 1998. I mean, we were just talking about that. And so that, so this particular social media account that I was following was pushing for parents to hold off until 16. And previously, when I'd seen sort of initiatives like this, it was no phones until eighth grade, like no social media until eighth grade. And now it's, I'm seeing that it's being pushed that you shouldn't do it until they're 16. And even when they're 16, there should be a significant amount of like conversation and parental guidance and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, I understand, like, I mean, we have family members who have kids that are, you know, 13, 14, and they're on social media. I have coworkers who have kids that are 13, 14 that are on social media. I can categorically say, and I know it's hard. You can always do the like, never say never. I mean, Bernie's 8. There is no way that we'll be on social media when she's 13. Nope. And you can isolate the audio and play it back to me if I'm a total hypocrite. But I just, I know for myself, and I have a, you know, I have a public job. I have a public social media presence. I know how much the sort of what the mental gymnastics are and the boundary setting and the active like work that I have to do regularly to manage the amount of feedback that I receive from people, good and bad, of course, particularly the bad, but even the good I have to manage. I mean, there's just no way that at 13, I think that my child would be ready to do that. And then of course, because I have a public job, I just will not allow her to be in situations where she could read stuff about like what people would say about me. That's a whole nother layer.
And what's going to happen to her and what's going to happen to your kids is people are going to tell her to her face what they think of you. That's coming. I've lived that and that's coming. And it gets weird when teachers tell them what they think of you.
Yeah.
And it's so it's coming. But when it's person to person, they have to be more careful with what they say and how they say it because it's face to face and it can usually be talked about. It can be a good conversation. But I think whether your parents are in a public job or not, I don't think any 13-year-old, and I'll just say it because I feel so strongly about this, I don't think any 13-year-old should be on social media.
Yeah.
And I can say that I'm not a hypocrite because I wouldn't let my kids on Facebook.
I know. You wouldn't even say your kids' full names on the radio. I mean, this is, remember when we started doing the podcast and you would start calling them Gar and Campbell and you got all worked up about it. And I was like, okay, well, they are grown-ups. Like Gar was an intern on my TV show and we would have him on the show and we would say his name, Gar Punnett. And you were like, I don't know about this. And I was like, except he's 21 and he can.
Well, I think you were more public with my son than I ever was. And because he was making choices on his own at that point.
He was also an adult. Yes.
Also an adult. But I mean, we did it to be respectful to them as children, that telling funny stories on them, using their name, took away their agency and who they got to be and how they got to glide through the world. And that just didn't seem fair to me. And if we did tell stories on them, and I've said this before, we always asked their permission. So if we were going to tell a funny story about the family, we would have a little family meeting. And we would get everybody's approval to make sure it was okay to tell the story because they are human beings and it's their life. And this is going out into the world. Their friends' parents were going to hear it.
Right.
Their teachers were going to hear it. So they had to be okay with it. But that aside, because our situations are so different than most people's, I just think I was having dinner with some friends a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about 20 years from now, what will we all look back on as a society, in most regret? And one of my friends who worked in news for years and years and years and said, hands down, it's going to be social media.
Yeah.
Hands down. It's going to be like sugar. It's going to be like those things. We're going to be like, what the hell were we thinking?
Mm-hmm. Letting I mean, our I think kids... that now about pesticides.
Yeah.
What were we thinking kids... that we could grow our food with poison?
Yeah. What were we thinking? But I mean, I think with social media, I think it really is, you know, you talk about mental gymnastics, and I feel very strongly about how I live my life. I want to live a small life. I don't want to consume a lot. I don't want more than I need. I'm really clear about that in my own head. And then I get on Instagram. And it makes me want. It makes me want. Oh, I want to go there. Oh, I want a bigger house. Oh, I want, even though I've made intentional decisions for how I'm going to live my life.
Yeah.
And this is a person who's been on this earth a long time. Mm-hmm. I am solid in who I am. Mm-hmm. And it gets in my head.
Yeah.
How is a 13-year-old supposed to resist that? A 13-year-old girl or a 13-year-old boy?
I know.
How do you resist when the world's coming at you about all of these things that look like they're more fun or they should be what you want? I don't even know what a social media account looks like for a teenager. It's like, I mean, I see how teenage girls wear makeup, and that's bizarre to me.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of that I can relate it to is like the damaging effects of like reading Seventeen magazine and like Cosmopolitan when I was in high school.
Oh, yeah.
And if you look back, which I think we used to do on the radio show, didn't we pull old episode or old Cosmo we've covers?
We've talked about it before. Yeah.
Did we do that on our radio show? If we didn't, that would have been a good bit. We should have done it. Anyway, maybe we can get our radio show back. But we would, when I look back at like the types of articles and when if you read headlines from like the late 80s and 90s from the, you know, just all these magazines and then the interview questions. I mean, this has really been like when I went down that rabbit hole of when I read Jessica Simpson's book. Yep. And then if you watch all that stuff on Britney Spears and you watch, you know, that little docuseries that was put together about her and you watch Diane Sawyer asking her if she's a virgin. I mean, all this stuff. That the one thing that gives me a little bit of hope is like, I grew up in that era and I do still feel like that was very damaging stuff. Like when you look back at what flew then, I'm like,
but it's
I don't
flying.
Know.
Elizabeth, it's flying now.
Yeah, I guess maybe it is. I'm just not looking
at
it.
And it's in their bedrooms with their doors closed.
Yeah.
And they're scrolling through it.
Well, and that's what it was in those magazines. I mean, we would
but
read
it was
it
with... one magazine a month.
Yeah, that's true. But there were a lot of magazines. I mean... There was a lot of them. There was Teen Beat and Tiger Beat and Hot Teen and, you know, all this stuff. I mean, it was really, I guess you're right. It was basically like, okay, maybe so let's relate it back to sugar. So maybe when I was a kid, it was the equivalent of like having a candy bar a week. And now it's the equivalent of having like six king size a day. I mean, maybe that's what we're thinking of.
And when you think about teenage girls in particular, it's, I mean, what I've seen with friends of mine that have teenage children, it's not the, you know, the New York publishers that are having and editors and writers that are having an effect on these children. It's the girl sitting next to them in class who's being mean to them on Instagram or on TikTok or whatever they're on. It's the bullying that's going on within their own small world. I mean, I could be obsessed with Phoebe Cates and the fact that she weighed, you know, 82 pounds, which was how it affected me.
Yeah.
Is, you know, the whole thing was about, you know, how thin can you be?
Mm-hmm.
So sure. Does that have an effect? Yeah. But I think it's so much more powerful. There were girls bullied in my class in grammar school. I could name them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the mean girl thing has been forever.
Right.
But the difference from the parents that I talk to is now it follows you home. So you could get home at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and school was school. And now it just keeps going.
Yeah, because you can see the comments, you can see what's being traded, you can see the photos. My big thing too is like everything is a photo. I mean, man, am I so happy that we didn't have good photos with phones when I was in college and at my most irresponsible. I mean, I was very irresponsible. And I was wearing like really tiny tube tops. I mean, it was kind of,
it was just the time. We can't blame you for that. It was the time.
It was
the time. Tube tops were big in the 70s too.
Yeah, I know. So. I do kind of like a tube top though. Like I would like to do a resurgence of a tube top at some point.
Do you? Really?
Maybe with something over it. Like, and if it was long.
How do you feel about like your daughter?
Tube, maybe it was like a tube tunic. That would, I feel like that might work for me. That might be the route that I would go.
Oh my God.
Like naturally dyed.
Oh my God. Does that sound so middle-aged? I'll have a tube tunic, please. We'll go tube top. We're going to go tube tunic. Oh my God.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's interesting. I think, I do think that you're right in terms of if you're making the decision and your kids are pushing you into it, I mean, you just have to be sort of the bad guy and you've got to just say, but then you also have to really model the behavior because it's really difficult to say you can't be on it if you're on it all the time too.
We just do it when they're asleep.
I know.
I mean, but that's, I mean, I think that's a really good point. If you're going to do that, you can't be when they come home from school or when you come home from work or whatever, you can't go right to your phone. They have to never see the phone in your hand.
I know.
I mean, one of the hardest things
work. I'm like, I got to just post this quick. Oh my gosh.
Well, we didn't allow our kids to watch TV during the week, during That's the school good. Week at all.
Yeah.
And so, but we had to watch TV to show prep for the show. So we have, you and I have natural outs on that one, but I think for parents who don't work in media, it's a harder sell to say, I have to be on my phone, but it's very rare that I will say that I believe something 100%. I could almost always see sort of the gray, but I just think if you have young children, because you have to start making that decision almost right away. Mm-hmm. I mean, if Heathcliff's already saying, I see.
The photo. They love it.
Then you know that you're going to have to make a decision pretty soon about how that, I mean, is it going to be that you're going to go on walks without a phone? Without a camera?
I know I have a watch, so I would still be able to.
What'd you say?
I said, I do have a watch, so I would be able to like contact someone. I just can't take a photo.
I mean,
it's not a bad idea. I mean, I think that the little bit more of phone separation would probably be good for everyone. I'm liking your idea of no TV during the week. I think when the school year starts this next fall, when I've got Bernie in third grade and Frankie in kindergarten, I think that's going to be our move.
It was the best thing we ever did. Because it always was. It just was always that way. And so they didn't really know it any differently. And they were busy. And so it, I mean, there were times when we would break it, you know, of course it wasn't perfect, but as if you talk to them today, they would say that was pretty much that was the rule. And because we started it so early, and I guess that's the thing, is you just have to start everything so early so that it's not, so you're not working backwards.
Yeah.
You know, I follow this one woman. She lives in England and she has a car cam focused on her daughter. I've given her account out on the podcast before, but I don't feel right doing that anymore. But I used to love it because she had a camera poised on her little daughter, who was actually a really good storyteller. Her daughter was fascinating and very funny, and it was charming. And I'm really interested in children's literature. So there's this sort of way of thinking about when you write a children's book, are you writing it from how a children would look at the world? So I found it fascinating from that standpoint, because it was just so pure and how this little girl thought. And then the change happened when the little girl realized that there was a camera.
Yeah.
And everything changed. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at the posts now, she has a little son too. Everybody's looking at the camera. And when the little boy is talking, the little girl's just smiling at the camera, and it's just, everything's different. So if you just look at that as one example of how it's sort of fracturing how those children are living in the world.
Yeah.
It's changing the natural experience of what it means to be a child. Mm-hmm. That's stunning if you think about it.
It is.
Oh gosh.
It is.
You seem depressed now.
It does feel depressed. I think I'm going to have another drink. Hold on.
I'll have a little bourbon.
Yeah, that felt good. That was refreshing. On the upside, the good news about having all of these technology pieces with us all the time is that I will never not know the sounds of my children's voices when they are so tiny. I do think that that is like the best gift because, you know, you had to get out the old video camera and do all this stuff and you just didn't capture that many moments because talk about that. Like I look at like home videos from when we were kids, we were all acting for the camera because the camera was as large as a television set and it was, like propped up on something and you only had so much VHS tape to work with. And so you had to be very intentional about what was recorded for life on this tape. And now like I always can hear their little voices. Like I recorded videos of them, like the noises they were making when they were sleeping or nursing or like all these things. Oh. And I am so grateful to have those sounds. So it's just, it is, again, it's like, it's funny how we started this conversation talking about drinking because we're drinking, whatever, that it's all about intention. Yeah. It really, it all comes back to that when we should have named this podcast, like something with an intention, because that is really the core of this experience in life is that if everything that you're doing with intention, where you're in the present moment is better than if you're not, it's just better.
Yeah. And I think I do have a friend who's a professor of psychology and I've talked quite a bit to her about the actual research. Mm-hmm. On social. So we'll have her coming up and that'll be a more definitive conversation on this. This is just you and I having strong feelings about this. But I do think it's, you know, for all the young moms out there, you have such an opportunity to do it differently than most of the world. Mm-hmm. And your kids will benefit from it.
Yeah.
Your kids will benefit. I mean, there's no, we could pull the research and when we do a more research-based podcast on this, the numbers are staggering in terms of teen depression. I mean, the numbers, I know you've come across them too. They're staggering. And it is amazing to me that it isn't being legislated away because it's so definitive on what the problems are for teenagers and social media.
What times we're living in. It's the wild, wild west. There's always something that's the wild, wild west. And
yes.
This is where we are. Well, listen, we hope that maybe this podcast didn't drive you to drink, drove us to drink through the whole thing. It was great with intention. I was very intentionally sipping wine. And hey, Judgy McJudgerson, I'm not even through this glass that you were thinking was this giant vat of wine. It was really a offensively small pour if you're me.
That's right. And I went somewhere just recently. And I haven't had a pour, like, God, where was it? I was at some restaurant in Elizabeth. They poured it to the top of the glass. It's like, who are you?
What wine was it? Like Boone's Farm? Like, what was it? I mean, geez.
Where was I? I was at a hotel.
Cheesecake Factory? What was going on? I'm just saying that because they have large portions there. I'm not trying to knock on Cheesecake Factory. I'm sure they're delightful.
But it was just so funny because I looked at her. I was like, okay, you're going to get a really nice tip because that's like the biggest pour I have ever seen in a wine of glass at a bar.
That's so funny.
Anyway.
All right. Well, cheers.
Wrap us up, darling.
Love spending time with you. It's fun to do these podcasts at night. This is nice.
I know. I kind of like
it. We should do a Best to the Nest after dark every so often. It's nice. Or a little more loosey-goosey. If you're enjoying this podcast, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a review at Apple Podcasts. We like those too. Apparently reviews really help. It helps promote your podcast. So thank you.
We would like that. That'd be wonderful. Quick tease to what's coming up after this podcast. It will be Elizabeth live from Ireland.
Yes.
And I'm so excited about that. And I can't wait to hear about that. So do you know what town you'll be in when we do it? Are you going to Dublin?
I'm going to be in Dublin. I'm going to be in Belfast and I'm going to be in Killarney. And that I think is in 2 weeks. Next week, I'll be with you.
You're going up to Northern Ireland.
Yeah, it's going to be a big journey. So yeah, we're going to carve out time. We got to figure, number one, I have to figure out what time zone I'm going to be in. I'll manage that. And then we'll record a podcast when I'm in Ireland. It'll be great.
You're only like 6 hours ahead of me.
Yeah, it's
7 hours. It's not too bad. And I'm happy to stay up for that one. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at Best the Nest. We are the podcast that brings you home.